Welcome to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio.
I think it's Chasing the Word time. We're now in the book of Ecclesiastes, and we started off the series talking about the meaning of work. Mm-hmm. We knew that when we jumped into this, it was going to be an interesting exercise in faith for us because we didn't know what was going to happen with work in general in this world.
Right.
And the situation that our listeners, our partners, would find themselves. Mm-hmm. A lot's changed in the past few weeks, and a whole bunch of stuff hasn't.
Right.
In fact, a lot of people are hoping that certain things would change. That haven't. We're in limbo, but yet we have to persevere and figure out what to do while we're waiting.
Yeah. When we started this study on Ecclesiastes a couple of years ago, actually, you and I started then thinking about what to do with it. We weren't even expecting something as crazy as what's happening in our whole world right now. Everything with the pandemic that's going on and how it's affected so many people's lives. But I think this time is so appropriate for us to be going through the book of Ecclesiastes. Even though we've said before, there is such negativism in the way the writer talks.
Yeah.
To me, there is a lot of hope as well. It prompts some questions that will get us really digging into other scriptures that can answer some of these questions.
If the writer's asking tough questions, and this book is full of tough questions, but they're ones that we don't want to face because if we actually start asking them ourselves, we might find ourselves in the same emotional space that the writer of Ecclesiastes is.
Right, right.
It's also been considered a book of wisdom for those who are experiencing great trials and stress in their lives.
Yeah.
As if it was a comfort. But when we read it from not being in a position of utter loss, like at the graveside or facing insurmountable odds in something, at the extremes of life, any other time this book seems like a real whining succession of complaints.
Yeah.
But they are the kind of life we often lead. That is the most uncomfortable question I think that I've had to face. How much do I really believe like this? How much do I think like this?
Mm-hmm.
I just finished writing a sermon that we broadcast on the program this past week about how we know what we really believe.
Mm-hmm.
The theme of that sermon was there's a notion that is very new to most modern thought, which is this, that our emotions tell us the truth about what we really believe.
Mm-hmm.
Living in a rational society, we don't like to face our emotions or let them have control of us. We want to subdue them. We want to be rational people.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it seems to be true, and the Bible's absolutely backed this up. The emotions that we have are a genuine lens into what we really believe, our actual heart beliefs.
That's tough.
Understanding that those things exist and that God knows those things and sees those things is something that we are very wise to acknowledge and then to plumb the depths of to discover what God has for us there.
Mm.
And it's one of the principles that goes into our study of Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm.
Can we find a way to the real truth, not just when we feel, but can we find the real ultimate truth that is God in the middle of somebody else's misguided beliefs based on a lot of wacky ideas, twisted ideas that started good but ended badly?
Mm-hmm.
Can we find our way to what God has for us, his truth, by paying attention to the lies we tell ourselves? And this book, Ecclesiastes, I'm afraid, is full of lies that the writer tells to himself.
Right. Right.
And I think God intends for us to see him go through that exercise in futility.
Mm.
And so we face those questions maybe in ways that the writer couldn't even face.
Yeah.
And in that way, we actually find what God's trying to tell us.
Mm.
Let's jump into the middle of chapter 2 again. We ended last week at verse 11. So let's pick up in verse 12.
Then I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man be like who comes after the king? He will do what has already been done. And I realized that there is an advantage to wisdom over folly, like the advantage of light over darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness, so the proverb goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I also knew that one fate comes to them both. So I said to myself, what happens to the fool will also happen to me. Why then have I been overly wise? And again I said to myself that this is also futile. For just like the fool, there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man, since the days to come both will be forgotten. How is it that the wise man dies just like the fool? Therefore, I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for everything is futile and a pursuit of the wind. I hated all my work that I labored at under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or foolish? Yet he will take over all my work that I labored at skillfully under the sun. This too is futile. So I began to give myself over to despair concerning all my work that I had labored at under the sun. When there is a man whose work was done with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he must give his portion to a man who has not worked for it, this too is futile and a great wrong. For what does a man get with all his work and all his efforts that he labors at under the sun? For all his days are filled with grief, and his occupation is sorrowful. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is futile. There is nothing better for man than to eat, drink, and enjoy his work. I have seen that even this is from God's hand, because who can eat and who can enjoy life apart from him? For to the man who is pleasing in his sight, he gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and accumulating in order to give to the one who is pleasing in God's sight. This too is futile and a pursuit of the wind. There's a lot of whining in this, but there's a lot of selfishness in this. I mean, he is almost lamenting the fact that he's got to leave all of his wealth to his children. He doesn't have a lot of respect for them, it doesn't sound like.
That old, fairly snarky saying goes something like this. Get all you can all you get, and poison the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Which is meant to be kind of a mocking humor at those who work so hard to store for themselves when all it's going to do is add more weight to your life, more stuff you got to care for. And of course, the things you can aren't going to last forever anyway. How many canned peaches can you eat in a year? And yet people would say, no, they're all mine. I raised all these peaches. I canned them all. No one else worked for these cans. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep them all. There seems to be a lot of that in the king's speech, all the things that he has accumulated. And he resents the possibility, the likelihood, that those who come after him will inherit it all without working for it. Of course, he kind of forgets that there was a promise that God gave the people of Israel before they even got to Israel, which was, you will inhabit lands you did not conquer. You will take over wine presses you did not dig. You will inherit silos of grain that you did not grow. This is my gift to you because I will fight for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be a glorious celebration of God's provision to us. And yet this king seemed to think not just that it's all about him, but it should be all about him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's troubling in itself.
Right. It reminds me of the parable Jesus told in the book of Luke 12 about the rich man that yielded a great crop.
Mm-hmm.
There was an abundant harvest. And so he tore down all of his barns and built bigger barns to store the surplus grain. I have plenty for myself, he says.
Yeah.
And God says,
fool.
You're a fool because tonight your life is required of you. Not that I think, you know, God is in for us when we acquire wealth on our own or when we acquire good things for our families and for ourselves. But I think one of the questions that we talked about before was, what is your attitude regarding your work? And what is your attitude regarding the things that you accumulate?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we have an attitude of what you said, get all you can all you get, and poison the rest, that is a poisonous attitude. And you're not just poisoning the rest, you're poisoning yourself. You're poisoning your own spirit. And it does not produce good fruit in any way.
There's a reverse ancillary to that. What about the things you don't have, you can't get, but then you still want to poison what those you do get, get?
Mm-hmm. If I can't have it, no one can.
So that covetousness and that spite is a companion to greed and selfishness, but it's a very different thing. It's a self-destructive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's plenty of discussion now about what you do about those who are rioting and looting during or after all of the protests that are happening right now in so many of the major cities of America.
Mm-hmm.
There is genuine grief in a huge part of our population about the loss of their men.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the black community, it isn't just about those who are getting murdered by the police in the streets. There's a huge amount of grief in the African-American community, especially about the number of young men
mm-hmm.
in poverty who get swept up in the legal system and are paying very, very long penalties in prison
right.
for crimes that we know empirically people of other ethnic groups pay far less of a price in years
mm-hmm.
in their incarcerations for mm-hmm. the same crimes.
Right.
It's proven. And I'm not making this a political statement. It's simply an empirical fact. And those who suffer under that reality, that we bear more responsibility for the crimes that we commit as a community than any other people group in America, has got to be a deep grief.
Mm-hmm.
Compound that with those who are not incarcerated having to live under the thumb or the boot of oppressive police forces.
Mm-hmm.
We are, as a country, again, waking up to this kind of injustice. And I think we're beginning to pay attention to it. But there's many of us distracted from the topic mm-hmm. by looking at the illegal abuses and the thievery that goes on as a result of this kind of uncontrolled anguish. And of course, there is looting going on in America right now. And there are many property owners, many business owners that are suffering on top of all this because right. of that looting.
Right.
And the breakdown of trust in the police to be able to control that because they don't trust it will be fair to everybody. There's plenty of people that expect the police to come in and just punish everybody they find, irregardless of the facts or truth right now, simply because they're frustrated too.
Mm-hmm.
What's the way out of that? That is the big question facing our country. And I do strongly believe that as a Christian community, we should be praying very specifically to God, imploring Him, God, what's your solution to the situation we're in? And what is it that we should be praying for and doing right now to bring your peace, to be peacemakers, so that others who are innocent don't have to suffer because of the rage of some born in the grief of a very large community?
A trauma that they experience.
Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. And now, back to our discussion.
To bring your peace, to be peacemakers, so that others who are innocent don't have to suffer because of the rage of some born in the grief of a very large community.
The trauma that they've experienced.
What I'm trying to say is that all of these things are truly interconnected. Spiritually speaking, I don't believe we can stand apart from this and say, this is none of my business and I can be judgmental against those who are committing crimes.
Right.
We have to step into this prayerfully and say, God, these are my people. This is my country. What do you want me to pray for?
Mm-hmm.
How do you want me to perceive this? What do you want me to know about what's going on right now?
How can we be agents of peace
right.
in the middle of the chaos?
Now look back at the book that we're reading right now. The king is very preoccupied with what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard once him say, this is what I saw someone say or think, and it made me ponder. That'll come later. You'll actually be struck with these incongruous thoughts that make him think about his life in a different way because of the example and life of another.
Mm.
But for right now, it's all about his perspective and how he has to be the one to have the final opinion on things.
Mm.
And frankly, this king we're talking about is a dictator. And he's not admitting that he's acting impetuously like a spoiled toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a lot of truth in the feelings he's expressing because many people have felt these things and it gives the lie to the truth inside our hearts. We can't hide it anymore. We really do feel these things. And if we really feel them, it tells us what our heart really believes. Whether it's right or not, it just spills out.
Mm.
So what about our attitude towards our work? What does the attitude itself tell us about what we believe?
Well, it would appear that the writer of Ecclesiastes has an attitude that all of his work is for himself, that it's not for the benefit of others, that it's not for the benefit of serving God or giving glory to God. It's not even for the benefit of his offspring, for his children.
Right.
For
and he had many.
For his heirs. Your attitude about your work says a lot about your gratitude.
Mm.
I believe that if we have gratitude in our hearts for our ability to work, for the things that we can achieve through our work, for the things that we can acquire through our work, that gives us opportunity to bless others. If we're grateful, then we know where our provision comes from.
Which goes to the next question. Can you have gratitude or thankfulness without having an object of that gratitude?
Mm.
We're talking about a spiritual principle here. And if spirit, pneuma, breath, comes from God, the wind that we hear about through this entire chapter, if we don't recognize that it's Him behind all these things, then we don't direct our gratitude or our thankfulness towards anything worthwhile. In fact, it just kind of floats off in space.
Right.
Now, there was a movie years ago called The Village, and I thought it was a fascinating kind of fantasy sci-fi epic about what would happen if a village was living in a time where everything was buttoned down to the bare essentials and family and all the puritanical things we used to celebrate in our American history. What if we could actually make that happen? So you're in this village and you know something's off. It's kind of like a Twilight Zone episode. All through it, they keep stopping to give thanks. And every time this kind of quasi-prayer is mentioned as kind of a rote saying, it's never directed towards anybody. The entire movie, we give thanks. To who?
Yeah.
And of course, it spills out at the end. This is actually a construct, an experiment being run by people who are the parents. They wanted to turn their backs on everything that had been harmful in the world and start over with their own microcosm. And their kids, of course, knew nothing of it. They just knew they were born into this society that was invented out of whole cloth. And that's the conceit of the movie. And it's horrifying when you realize what it really was to start with. So I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the movie for those who might want to go watch it. It was a fascinating film, but it was also disturbing to me because it was so obviously missing the key element of relationship. There can't be any real thankfulness, gratitude, without there being someone to receive it. And if there's no God, it's just us. We're giving thanks to ourselves, nothing else. And that is the kind of place we find ourselves a lot in this world. And I think there's a lot of despair, too, that's spilling into empty air with nothing to catch it. People really believe there's no one coming to their aid. There's no one that's going to make it right. And they're just giving up. Especially in a time of COVID where our health is at risk, 20, 30 million jobs gone. People don't know what the next paycheck's coming from or any help if there's not going to be a paycheck. These are hard realities. So I want to make sure that we hammer away on the truth of this, which is we need to be aware of these things and not shy from them, especially on the spiritual front, to say to each other in real terms, how are you really doing? And how do I really pray for you? And how can I literally help you today? And say, I'm not leaving until you give me a straight answer on this one. That to me seems to be genuine friendship.
Yeah.
Genuine community, genuine, as they say in the Greek word ekklesia, the coming together, the people called out to be a people. That is what we're supposed to be as a church, especially. But our neighbors around us, even if they're not part of the church, ought to be seeing the same thing in us.
Yeah.
So I would say for those of us in the situation that we find ourselves, we are in extreme situations, whether we like to admit it or not. And our individualist myth in America is kind of melting in front of our eyes. We realize we really do need each other. We've never faced this kind of challenge before. We better find a way to make new relationships and new ways of surviving happen. And I believe, as Christians, we have a resource. We have a wellspring.
Right.
We have fresh water in the spirit to drink from. We need to start doing it.
Yeah. We see that the writer talks a lot about the emptiness of his work. And I know that a lot of people feel that way about the work that they're doing. As long as you can find some way to express your gratitude, and express your creativity and give God that offering, then your work is not meaningless. Now, your work may be for a paycheck. It may not be your dream. It may not be your passion. That's okay, as long as you know that all you do is for God's glory and allow yourself to give Him that glory.
Like we've been telling our kids when they strike out from home, say yes to work. Don't wait for the perfect job to come along, because the one that comes along that you finally accept in your high standards will disappoint you. There will be something about it that's not perfect. You'll discover that along the way. And in the meantime, you will have learned a lot of ingratitude. You will expect to climb the ladder faster. You'll expect to get a higher wage than other people starting out might. We start to feel entitled. If we jump in right away, say yes to work and yes to opportunity, we have a whole different perspective. Wow, I got some experience here. I'm making an honest living. I'm making enough money to buy the things I want or to get a car or to pay off school loans or something. I'm doing the right thing. And there really is value in that. And even the writer of Ecclesiastes is saying that toward the end. At least enjoy your work. You'll get something out of the enjoyment.
Right.
Let me read the modern translation we're working from here. It's part of our study guide. It's available on our website at each of our podcast pages. And I encourage folks to go ahead and grab a copy of that, because if you'd like to do a Bible study with the questions that we put in there, we'd love to give it to you for free. It's right there on our website in the podcast section under each of these titles, Ecclesiastes, Chasing the Word series. So I'll start in verse 12, like you did with the Christian Standard Version, and this is how it reads for us. I turned on my heels to face wisdom and ask her where it all went. All those wise words sounded like the rantings of a fool or the babblings of a drunk. Had I been played for a fool? Were there more fools to come who will get drunk on my hard work and bear nothing but more fools hungry for folly? Well, compared to that, wisdom was certainly preferable. Like light is preferable to darkness. But that's about it. The world's full of wise men and fools, and fools who think themselves wise. And they're all going to the same place. Shocking, isn't it? All of them just stumbling in the darkness, really, all the way to the grave. What befalls one befalls the other. I moan to myself. The fool falls in the pit, and I'm no better off. Oh, what a cruel fate. The demise of the fool I understand, but the wise? I've got all the wisdom a man could hope for, and I'm still going down like the fool. The futility of it all is maddening. Even worse, when the wise man crumbles to dust, the fools left behind won't even remember his name. There rest the bones of the wise man and the fool, side by side. And foolishness keeps on going, oblivious to the wisdom that was lost. Then those fools will fill the graveyard, too. I'm sorry to admit that all this futility grew in me nothing but contempt. The very act of living, the striving for something better, just seemed like an evil joke. The wind howled its mockery all around me. I was working hard for nothing. I resented the waste of time pursuing things that only haunted me now. This burden was even heavier than the load of work I had heaped on myself to get here. I couldn't enjoy it, and someone after me would get to bask in it instead. Who knows what kind of person he'll be? Wiser than me? An utter imbecile? Either way, he gets full command of everything I've worked for all my life, and he'll get it all without lifting a finger. What a waste. Grief overwhelmed me. I couldn't shake the frustration of what my toils under the sun had not produced. Again, I thought, there's someone who's going to get everything I've worked for so hard, and he probably won't even deserve it. The finest things I could produce in life will be his toys. Why did I put myself through all of this? It's a sick and cruel joke. And what comes of it all? To be a human is to work hard and to have it all whipped out of your hands by that mocking wind. And still the hard work continues and the sunburn gets more painful. It's really just endless pain and frustration that you cannot escape. And night is no solace, full of troubled dreams and anxiety about the struggles of tomorrow. Why even try? There's no good way out of the fix we're in. If you've got to eat and drink just to live, you might as well throw a party and toast the hard work that vexes you. The soul senses the reality behind it all. You work hard so you can eat, because it's the thing that God himself gave to man to bring some sense of purpose. Without it, there would be nothing at all. If someone knows how to eat or drink, it's certainly me. No one ever drank me under the table. I've learned this. If you're given wisdom and you celebrate your fortune, or whether you're stuck in sin and tough living and lighten your burden with dissipation, either way, we all face God in the end. And to deny that fact is as futile as anything else. As hard as that truth is there at the end, I think is my one ray of hope in this entire chapter.
How so?
There seems to be a lesson in it. We can't avoid God. Mm. The hint is there that he's waiting for us, and that at the end of it, we do have to return to him what we did all this life.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an important aspect here, I think, of the writer of Ecclesiastes acknowledging that when it all comes down, we do have to give an account. And that is actually worth something.
Sandy and I will continue our discussion on Ecclesiastes chapter 2 on next Monday's program. As we end today, I'd like to highlight again our wonderful resident artist this month, Michael O'Brien. His project, Crown Him, is available to you for your support of Compassion Radio in any amount. Just let us know how you want to support us, and we'll be glad to send you a copy or make a download available to you of this incredible project.
The battle is not done. Jesus, who dies, shall be satisfied, and earth and heaven be one. This is my Father's world. The birds, their carols raise. The morning light, the lily white, declare the Maker's praise. This is my Father's world. He shines in all that's fair. In the rustling grass, I hear him bask. He's speaking everywhere.
Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. If God has enabled you to support His kingdom purposes, please give generously where you hear God's Word preached, celebrated, and lived. We need you, and we thank you for everything that you do and every prayer you offer on our behalf. Let us know you're standing with us and that you're chasing the Word together with us. When you call or write us today with your tax-free gift, make sure to ask for Michael O'Brien's brand new music project, Crown Him, available on CD or for digital download. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92855. And you can find us 24/7 at our website, compassionradio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.